Hey, you're listening to the Becoming Known podcast, where we believe that your work is worthy of recognition. Fear is a liar, and owning the spotlight is the most powerful way for you to build your brand. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Here's your host, Candace Hickman.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another week here on the Becoming Known podcast. Today, we have with us Erin Shields. Erin is the founder and owner of Style Sew Me. It's a do-it-yourself fashion-focused blog and a YouTube channel with over 56,000 subscribers. Erin has an online store that includes home sewing patterns, online sewing classes, and workshop. Her work has been featured in well-known publications in her industry, Sew News and Sew Magazine. And I really wanted to get Erin on today to talk about how she built her influence on YouTube and how you can do the same. So Erin, welcome to the show today, my girl.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course, I'm so excited to have you. You know, I was thinking recently, we've known each other for, it's been a year or more, right? Right. Because I think that we started off in this mastermind we were in together a little while ago. Both of us had interesting experiences in that mastermind, but nevertheless, we bonded as a result
of
it.
It's part of our story.
It's part of our love story. So we won't get into that here. But yeah, we've known each other for some time now, and it's so interesting because when I first met you in that mastermind that we were in, I didn't even have any concept of really how far along in your journey you were and how you were kind of this little local, not even local, but you were like this industry celebrity. This
I don't think so, but okay.
This sewing maven. So I'm really excited to chat with you today. And I kind of just want to start with, you know, the fact that you chose to really build your brand on YouTube when sewing is such a tangible thing. You know, you could have chosen to do it in your local community. And I'd love to hear a little bit about the backstory of Style Sew Me and really why it turned into this online forum, really.
Okay, awesome. So everything happened completely by accident, okay? So I started sewing when I was pregnant with my daughter in 2013. And it's simply because I did not want to buy those ugly, expensive, frumpy maternity clothes. And I found out that people were sewing their clothing and that it wasn't, you know, little old blue-haired lady sewing. You know, I felt like it was young people making stylish things. And so I said, okay, fine, I'll buy a little cheap sewing machine, get some material, and I'll make a couple of dresses to get me through my pregnancy because I had gained a lot of weight very quickly. And so I did that, but I ended up falling in love with sewing when I never intended to do so. And so once my daughter was born, that sewing kind of became my haven. You know, I really was able to escape the stresses of a newborn. Even with my husband being an active parent, I was still, I mean, anybody who's dealt with a newborn knows that this is the type of stress and type of exhaustion that I've never experienced in my life. And I was in the military for 8 years. So when I had a choice between eating, sewing, showering, or sleeping, sometimes I would choose sewing. And that was just to calm my mind. And so I ended up blogging just to kind of share, had no intentions with this. And that blog was not Style Sew Me. It was a mommy blog called Mind of Mom. And in the back of my head, I said, well, I don't really want to share the mom part. I want to share more of the sewing part. So I rebranded and I called it Style Sew Me. And I just shared pieces that I would make for myself. And I ended up getting connected with the sewing community on Instagram. I found some more blogs and I just got active there. And things took off for me about maybe a year later on YouTube when I was actually trying to make a skirt that I could not figure out how to make. I was following other people's tutorials and I was so confused. Well, I figured out a way to make that skirt and I simply just posted it on YouTube, didn't think anything else about it. That tutorial went viral in the community. because apparently everybody else had that problem. So that's how I really blew up on YouTube. And that was what kind of catapulted me to, I guess you could call it influencer status. Mm. I simply solved a problem that affected a lot of people in that particular area.
That's amazing. So how did you actually go? So what was the timeline from when you had your daughter to when you found YouTube? What was the space of time?
Oh, I had her in May of 2014. It was less than a year. It was pretty quick. Wow. Cause I had already been on YouTube and I was posting things. Maybe I had about 8 videos or so before I made that one. And that's the one that hit. And because I had that other content already on YouTube, people kind of had some other things to kind of sift through, even though it wasn't that great quality. But to this day, those videos are still getting play.
Wow. And so, okay, so you say you create this video, it solves this problem, it blows mm-hmm. up, it goes viral. Did you yes. see this sudden like influx of subscribers, or was it kind of like this gradual thing? You were having a ton of views, but, or was it like, wow, 1 minute I have 100 and the next minute I have 10,000?
It was a balance of both. It wasn't overnight, but it was within a couple of months. And what happened, I went back to trace where that traffic was coming from, and it was coming from Pinterest.
Huh.
And so that's how people started to find my old video. And from there, they started pinning it more. People started reposting it on their blogs. And when they would make my skirt, they started sharing, oh, this is how I made it. Because they would post it. The sewing community is very active on social media, very, especially Instagram. So every time someone made something for my tutorial, they would talk about it and more people would end up going back to that content.
Wow, that's amazing. So when you...
So I guess it was my cornerstone content, I guess you can say.
Right, right. And so when you... You didn't necessarily set out to make a viral video, did you even...
No.
Did you even know what that meant at that time?
I knew what it meant, but I had no concept that I could do something like that. I simply solved my problem and shared it with other people.
That's such a powerful lesson, I think, like just that right there. You know, mm-hmm. I had a conversation earlier today with somebody. We were just talking about the power of story and how, you know, how our stories can be catalysts for somebody's healing. But it's also like our discoveries can be powerful in that way if we choose to share them.
Yes. Yes. You cannot hold on to information, not all the time, especially if you know that other people are struggling with that thing. And I think so many people are scared to share because they don't want to feel vulnerable. They don't want to show that vulnerability. But that's what people want to see, is connection.
Mm. And so then with the YouTube channel itself, I know you were going through this period of exploration and you were trying to figure out how to, you know, sew your own clothing.
Yes.
Why did you choose to start uploading videos? Do you have a natural inclination towards teaching, or was it the creative aspects that were appealing to you? Why were you drawn to share it?
I am a classic introvert. I process a lot of information internally. I'm not, you know, an out there, hop around the city type of gal. You know, you mentioned it earlier in, you know, in the introduction, is like, how did you decide to do this online versus doing this, you know, locally? My lane is intimacy. And I feel like I get more intimate. And I don't know, I just feel like I have a better connection online because I'm filming this by myself. And, you know, I'm able to kind of focus on that.
That's an interesting perspective because I feel like most people would think the other way to be true.
Yep.
That there is greater intimacy in person. But I think that also is, it can be true as well. Like you're somebody that experiences that. Do you feel that you connect to the audience better and you connect to other people better?
I do. And what's funny is that when I tell my husband that I'm filming, like he leaves the house completely because I feel like I can completely take that pressure off of myself to be perfect, you know? And like, kind of when I strip away the eyes of people on me, then I can fully bloom and be myself. That's just my personality. But if I'm in the room with a whole bunch of people, I am having a mini freak out in my head. So online works perfectly for me.
It works well for you. Yeah, yes. Of course, that makes a lot of sense. And so, Erin, okay, so I want to back up a little bit. So you start this YouTube channel and you start doing these videos. And I know that there are a lot of people that when you look at something like YouTube and the fact that you've got 56,000, you know, subscribers and this huge social media following, it can be really overwhelming for people that are just getting started. Mm-hmm. And in those early days, how were you actually making the video content? Like, how would you go about figuring out not only the technical aspects of setting up a video and recording, but even the scripting around the content?
So Google University is your friend, right? If I had a question, I simply typed that question into Google until I found my answer. I think, you know, this may be a little bit harsh, but I think there is no lack of information when you have access to the internet. And so you have to just follow a trail of breadcrumbs. You might not ask the right question the first time, but you have to keep searching. And so I figured out kind of what I needed, because if I said, okay, well, I need to get a steady camera set up because I'm propping my iPhone up against, you know, a strategically stacked amount of books. Okay, girl, you need a tripod, you know? So, okay, well, a tripod is not going to work with my smartphone. So what kind of camera do I need? And then I would do that research, or I would reach out to a couple of other bloggers and say, hey, I really like your pictures. What kind of camera do you use? You know, I don't have a problem asking someone a question, and I got my answer most of the time, or I got enough information to find out what I needed to know. But it was really finding breadcrumbs and giving myself permission to do that research. As far as my content goes, I did not script in the beginning, and that allowed me to get content out faster, but the editing portion of it was terrible because it was no flow. So now when I'm doing content, I'll kind of, I guess the official term is, I'll storyboard it first. I'll plan and make my speaking points, and I'll kind of plan what kind of shots I want. And then my filming might take me a little bit longer to make sure I capture these angles and make these points, but my editing goes super fast because I got everything I needed. So if that's one tip that I would give to someone who's struggling with content, just focus on the quality of your content and streamlining your process. And that means doing a little bit of work up front, but it's going to make your life a lot easier, and you're going to put out a lot better content on the back end.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And I want to jump back into that in a second, but I actually want to speak to the very first part of your response, which was, okay, well, I saw that I needed a camera, so I kind of Googled it and I reached out to people and asked them what they were doing. And then I went and bought a camera. But, you know, I reckon there's probably a lot of people listening in that once again are going, well, she went out and bought a camera. I can't afford no camera. I don't have a budget to do this. And I'd also be interested in, I reckon there's so many ways that I could actually respond to that, but I would actually be really interested in what you would have to say to somebody that sits there and says, well, I mean, how can I even get going when I don't have the budget to purchase a new camera?
So I would answer that question and say, rent a camera. You can rent a camera for $50 a week. If you plan your content, just like I said, and you block your time, then don't worry about editing. Rent a camera for $50 a week. There are plenty of camera rentals. Google it. And you block your time, you film as much content as you can, and you send the camera back. You know, you borrow a camera from somebody. Put a call out to your personal network. Does anyone have a camera that I can borrow? Or if you have to use a smartphone, you know, I found out later, yes, you can use a smartphone with a tripod. You just buy a little $15 attachment. You know, there are options. You can go to thrift stores. You can go to pawn shops. If you don't have the budget to do some things, you may have to get creative in finding other ways to get it done.
Yes. You're so resourceful. I didn't even know that you could actually rent cameras. That's interesting.
You know how I found out? I follow some photographers and they made a post one time and said, oh, I'm trying out this new camera. This new lens that I rented. I was like, what? You can rent stuff? And then I started Googling.
That's true. There's pretty much not too many things that you can't make happen that you mm-hmm. can't do, is there? Like at this point, everybody's thought of almost everything.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Borrowlenses.com. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's who I use.
You said it's borrow what?
Lenses.com.
Borrowlenses.com. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very cool. Okay. All right. So we've decided that we're going to start a YouTube channel. We've rented this camera. We have it for a week. Mm-hmm. Please speak to the concept of getting all of the content together in the week. Like you kind of run over that. And, this is something that I do even with the podcast. It's like I have a lot of conversations in the space of a couple of weeks, and then I schedule and I out my content. It's a method called batching. I know that there's probably people that don't really know what we're actually talking about at this point. And so, would you just kind of break that down a little bit as well?
So it's the exact same concept. You plan out what content that you want to, what post or whatever that you want to do. It's especially easy if you're just talking to the camera. But if you're doing something visual like a tutorial, you want to make sure you have what your content is going to be, what materials you're going to need while you're filming it. You want to work with the time of day because lighting is very important. YouTube community will roast you if they can't see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like everything else can be, subpar, but lighting is very important. So I plan to do my content when I'm batching, usually when I am working from home during the day because I'm at home by myself, or doing my daughter's nap time on the weekends because I know I won't have that interruption. And then my husband's normally asleep that time anyway. So when the house is asleep, I film. So content, what are you covering? Supplies and your shot points, all of the shots that you want and the things that you want to say, have that bulletized. Mm-hmm. Like I have mine outlined so specifically where I'll say, this is the bullet point that I want to cover. This is a shot that I want to have. And I visualize it already finished in my head. And that's how I plan it out ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little bit of a fly by the seat of my pants type of gal. I can appreciate that method of doing things. And I know that could be very kind of helpful for people. You know, at the end of the day, Erin, I just feel like it can feel overwhelming when you really look at things on a bigger scale, when you're trying to see the whole thing done. But when then you break it down into really manageable bite-sized pieces, it doesn't have to be as complicated as what people think it is.
Right.
And, and I think that at the end of the day, you had this viral experience where you had this incredible tutorial and it goes viral. But for a lot of us, it can also be this process of like, it's just a matter of showing up kind of consistently. And I'm sure even in that time, so since the time that your video has went viral, have you continued to see like this steady growth in the subscribers, the engagement of your community, or how has things been since your 5 minutes of fame there?
It's definitely grown because I continue to put out content. Yeah. And I don't put out content with the expectation that it's going to hit that way, but I look at the data, I look at my analytics that come on YouTube, and I can tell very easily what type of content my people want to see. They want to mm-hmm. see tutorials. I don't always want to do tutorials, so that's not going to stop me from not doing other content because they need to see that stuff too, skill building. Mm-hmm. I know who I'm talking to. I know who my target audience is. I understand what they're looking for now, but in the beginning, I just threw some crap at the wall and I saw what stuck. Mm. And if I could give, advice to someone who wanted to get started, it would be to just do that. Just show up. Mm. Because as you grow, People are going to engage with you. They're going to comment, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? And even if they don't, you're going to look in your analytics and you're going to see, wow, the bulk of my people are interested in this topic. Mm-hmm. The bulk of my people are interested. So I know I need to focus more on this content. Mm-hmm. The stats will tell you where to go. You just need to show up. And don't worry about getting it perfect.
Absolutely. Hey, Erin, you know, you speak to the fact that people will comment on your stuff and ask you questions and you feel like very engaged and you've created this intimacy within your community, particularly through YouTube and in the online space. And I wonder what type of opportunities have come to you, or how has being on YouTube really helped to shape and expand your business?
Wow. So YouTube was the jumping off point to where my business is now. When I first started doing tutorials, I was blogging, but the bulk of people who were connecting with me were on YouTube. And I eventually started selling clothing that I was making, and I hated it. You know, that was the natural order of things, or so I thought. If I know how to sew, then I'm supposed to hem pants and make dresses for people for their birthdays, but I hated it. And I went back to what I liked, and that was just sharing my experience in my hobby. And that eventually led to me opening my pattern store, mm-hmm. because that's another way that that's another type of product that this community was consuming. I had a disastrous experience when I had my clothing line, and it was, girl, let me tell you. So
I know I was about to say, this has been a perfectly packaged, like, linear process. Some dirt here.
Let me backtrack a second and tell you about this huge loss I had. So when I started selling my clothing, and this is going to answer your question, promise. When I started selling my clothing, I started to get more orders, and I also had a boutique that contacted me. This was opportunity number one. This was my biggest opportunity that came to me. I had a boutique that came to me and said, hey, we want to carry your pieces. And I was just getting ready to launch my online store because I had just been making pieces for people here and there. So I entered into a contract with this place. I'm so excited. Like, designers' goals are to get into boutiques, and I was getting a deal before I even had my official launch. Like, that was a huge opportunity that my platform afforded me. Well, through no fault of YouTube, this boutique closed in the middle of my contract after I had flown to New York, found fabric, found a factory, and gotten several thousands dollars worth of clothing manufactured because I could not sew and keep up with the demand myself. I'm still working full time. So I had a few thousand dollars worth of inventory sitting in my house collecting dust because I had no email list, no community that wanted finished pieces. I had spent all of my time building a community of DIYers on YouTube. They did not want finished clothing. I spent money and time developing a product that my audience did not want and did not need. And had I had any concept of, you know, target market analysis, I did not, okay, obviously, then I would have known that that was not the avenue to go. So I took the next designs that would have been my next pieces for my clothing line, and I turned those into sewing patterns, and I started selling those through my blog. That is how I began my sewing pattern company. And here we are, I believe, 11 patterns later.
Girl, you're brilliant. Like, you're the way that your mind thinks, and, you know, the way that you're able to quickly shift lanes, like, it's brilliant.
Yeah. You know? It was hard because it was embarrassing. Mm-hmm. I had announced to all of my friends and my family that I started a clothing line. I got this big deal. And then a few months later, it's crash and burn. Like, it was humiliating. I didn't sew for a few months. I took a break. But because of all the things that I had learned, you know, in the meantime, I said, I can't unknow this. I can't unsee the opportunity here. So what else can I do? What, I built this community. What do they want? You know, and I just moved on from there.
I think that that is a really important topic to kind of highlight about the fact that when, as you get visibility and as you kind of become known in a specific industry or known for your gifts and talents, a lot of what you're doing becomes public. And I think that there is, I even had a conversation about this a couple of days ago. I'm having lots of conversations, but just about the fact that, you know, there can be shame. You, when you become known, when you become visible, you almost open yourself up to the chance of humiliation in a situation just like this.
Yes.
You know, and I think the, it's so important to, and you told kind of the lesson of the story and the story itself, but when you're resilient, you know how to keep your head about you, remain confident that you have an audience that needs you, that there are people that need your work, and you just quickly make a small pivot in order to make it work for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm. And so when you, when all of that kind of happened for you, were people pretty kind about it, or?
They didn't say anything bad to me about it. Mm. I think in my head, I made way bigger, more of a deal than people even cared about, you know? And now that I've become, you know, more known for my patterns, I'm able to tell this story, you know, and people kind of see that there's light at the end of the tunnel, you know, whereas when I was going through it, I wasn't ready to share that testimony yet. You know what I mean? And I think that fear of not being ready to share was that I hadn't had any results in my alternative path. Mm. And I just needed to keep going.
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's amazing how there were signs right from the beginning that, like, this is what you were called to do. You know, there were signs right from the beginning, and you had this little moment of deviation where you're trying to like make something else happen when you were always called to really empower people through education, empowering them to be independent, it seems like.
Yes.
You know, and so that was always there for you, and you just had to be shoved right back into it.
Yep.
that's cool. You know, this is a cool story, Erin. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that it was a dream of yours at one point to get into boutiques. You know, I just assumed that this was the way that it always been for you.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would love to say that this was all planned and strategy, but this was just me fumbling along and deciding to not quit.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes that's, actually, not sometimes. I think that all the time, that is the only thing that matters. You know, we've known each other for a little while now. I've myself, when it's come to building my brand, have gone this way and then pivoted and shifted directions and tried to go this way and started with a strategy and then tried to go. And I can truly say that, like, the people that I've seen that have partnered and journeyed along with me throughout the process of building a brand, the people that choose to stick with the one thing and just show up consistently in that one area are the people that are thriving now.
Yeah.
You know, and pretty early on you find YouTube, and then it's not, it, I mean, I'm sure there are lots of elements, you know, like the lighting and, you know, the quality of the way that you teach that are very important for your success, but it's also that you just showed up consistently. And at the end of the day, I think that is one of the most powerful things.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all people look for, because it builds trust. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about consistency, you know, somebody's probably listening and freaking out about, okay, well, how often do I need to do this? I did not do content once a week. You know, I didn't do it on a set schedule, but I didn't stay gone a very long time, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's what that filler content is. If you put so much pressure on yourself to make everything epic all of the time, then, you know, the quality may be sacrificed. Your sanity might be sacrificed. Just plan the bigger pieces of content and then get yourself some filler content, you know, just to keep the conversation going, to keep the interest there, to let people know you're still here, you're still serving. And then, you know, listen, they'll start giving you ideas on what to do.
So true. So true. So true. Hey, Erin, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all that you're experiencing the type of success that you are. You know, I have just started this podcast at the beginning of December, but I've already had, my content is completely, today is the last day of recording until April because I've got all interviews for everybody through till the end of March already. And actually probably by the time that most people are hearing it, this is probably going to be towards the end of March. Just know that it was Tuesday, January 15th when Erin and I record, when we actually recorded this episode. But I've interviewed a lot of people, and you're somebody that has a natural way of teaching, and you get to the point very quickly. You're very succinct. And even though we didn't prepare this interview prior to actually getting on, you've been able to share information in a really linear fashion, which I think is a testament to your teaching strengths and your teaching abilities. And so it really doesn't surprise me that, you know, people love you.
Thank you. Thank you. I get to the point in as few words as possible.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah, even girl.
To people and they're really long-winded. I'm like, oh my God, get to the
point. I'm a bit the same. I'm like, tell me the punchline in the beginning and then you can waffle on, but I need to know the punchline. Don't keep me waiting with bated breath.
Yes. And talking about feedback from the community, I actually asked people, I said, do you guys want me to put music in my videos? Because I don't. And because there are pieces in my videos where I'm sewing and it's just a sewing machine vibrating, you know? And I just kind of fast forward that part. But I'm like, you guys want music? And they're like, no music, no fluff. Keep doing what you're doing. They said, because we don't like the people that get on and they're talking about the cold they had for 2 weeks and all of this stuff. Like, just do it. Because when my video turns on, I'm like, hey, Erin here, let's get to it. Like, I'm starting the content within 10 seconds. That's how fast you can lose people's attention. And that's my strength. And the people who are attracted to that are the people that ride with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not worry about anybody else.
Right, girl. You're gonna find those people that are no nonsense, that just want to make it happen. And yeah, they're going to be for you. Yeah. Hey, well, congratulations on all of the success that you've achieved so far. I'm so happy to hear that, you know, the patterns, you know, is really doing well for you, and to kind of have witnessed everything that's been happening for you. And I've seen you on a couple of different interviews and speaking at different things lately. And it's amazing the opportunities that can kind of just open up to you when you find your lane and you just stick in it, you know? So congrats.
Thank you.
Oh yeah, of course. Hey, Erin, before we get going here, I would just love you to go ahead and share with everybody, if they would like to connect with you further, how they can go about doing that.
Sure. My blog is stylesewme, that's sew.com. My patterns are stylesewmepatterns.com. And I am on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube under stylesewme. As well.
Pretty basic, guys. Pretty basic. Yeah. Awesome. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on today, Erin. For everybody that is listening in, I hope you found this episode incredibly useful. I know myself that there are things that is worth being reminded of every now and then. And so YouTube is not something that I've explored. And this has been a little bit of inspiration for me as well. If you would like to stay connected here with the community, please hop on over to Facebook. We have a private group there. It's called the Becoming Known Podcast Insiders. That's a place where you can go to get more information, to continue the conversation, to ask any questions that you have on your journey to becoming known. And if you found this episode enriching or resourceful, please go ahead and leave us a review. Every review is like a little bit of street cred. And so we appreciate the couple minutes you take to write a few sentences. We will look forward to catching up with you next week here on the Becoming Known podcast. See you later, everybody.
Thanks again for listening to the Becoming Known podcast, where we believe that your work is worthy of recognition, fear is a liar, and owning the spotlight is the most powerful way for you to build your brand. We'll see you back here next week for more tips to becoming known.